Welcome back to Talking Insights, and welcome back to a very special guest, Dr. Nikolai Reynolds and his colleague, Colin Hu. Now, if you missed his first appearance, let me catch you up to date. Dr. Nikolai is the Global Head of Product Testing and Innovation at Ipsos, a true trailblazer when it comes to integrating AI, machine learning, and experimental research into market insights. He has a doctorate in food sciences and economics, so he understands both the science of human behavior and the tech shaping the future of data. And Colin Hu, Chief Research Officer at Ipsos, Innovation and Market Strategy and Understanding, with a PhD in psychology and over 20 years of research experience and expertise in behavioral economics and text analytics, Colin brings deep insights into the psychology behind consumer behavior. So, Nick and Colin, thank you for being here and welcome to Talking Insights. And I wanted to start by asking if one of you could explain me what synthetic data is and how it's generated.
So synthetic data is it's just simple language. It's really just data that is artificial, but is generated based on what we learn from human data. So it's not made up data in the sense that there is no relationship to anything. It is artificial data that is generated based on what we learn from how humans may respond to certain things, certain stimuli, certain items, how they raise certain questions. Basically, that's what we refer to as synthetic data. It's that data that has learned how humans respond, and then we generate data that looks similar to how humans respond.
How is it being used now in terms of like product testing? And I wanted to follow up this question on what motivated you to explore this?
You know, if we're thinking about product testing, you know, normally in product tests, you have consumers evaluating product. So the motivation to consider synthetic users was because we want to make product testing a little bit more agile. The challenges that our clients often have is the production of, for instance, prototypes costs a lot of money. Procuring the products in the market, if it's existing products, it costs also money, as well as the packaging, shipment, and all the security measurements, as well as, you know, what are you going to do with empty packages and so forth, yeah? And also the in product testing, we often have very low incidence target groups, very specific target groups, which are difficult to achieve, so that drives also cost. So the motivation was basically to create a little bit more agility in product testing. And product testing, of course, we have the situation where you need to have consumers evaluate the products. Yeah? So you can't just use all old database to predict how consumers evaluate, because the past cannot predict the future, particularly if you're thinking about, you know, the nuances of a product, you know, the smell, the diagnostics, the lather, for instance, depending on the product category. So we're using all the five senses, and that is important to consider that when we want to generate synthetic consumers, we still need to have real consumers. So that's a fundamental thing which we're doing in our approach, is to say, okay, we can't just use just a pure synthetic population. We need to always have a mix of real consumers evaluating products, consumers evaluating the products, and from those we generate the synthetics, as Colin.
That's very interesting, because every time that I hear talking about synthetic data and when we talk about AI, it's very interesting, because these past few days we've had a few of these conversations in the office of like how AI and how AI is going to shape kind of the world and the way that we work on. And we tend to forget that it's not going to entirely replace, but it has to like mix with the human touch and the human components. That's very interesting what you were saying. What are some of the main challenges associated with like using synthetic data? And I can imagine that it's like this component of having to link between the human and the computer. It's kind of one of the challenges, right?
Yeah, that's true. Do you want to say something generally about synthetic, and I can add to this?
So I think there may be two groups of challenges, okay? The first group is more technical, if you would, and that would mean, like, if you want to generate synthetic data, like you said, Antonio, you do need the AI to first learn from some humans how humans respond to things. So the first technical challenge, if you would, is finding a good representative samples of human to learn from, for the AI to learn from, ensuring that that data is good so that the AI will learn what is right and then be able to generate synthetic data. So I would say that's like the first challenge, which is more in the technical group. But the other group of challenges I'll talk about is just more for users of synthetic data, is understanding how it works and not overcoming the myths that are associated with synthetic data. Like you said, some people may think it's just completely data that has no basis and it just comes out of nowhere. Well, that's not true. You do need to have the AI learn from human beings before you can generate synthetic data. The second thing I would say that's a challenge, that is a non-technical challenge, is just helping people understand that there are different types of synthetic data, different ways of generating synthetic data. And so sometimes when we talk about synthetic data, we have to be careful to make sure that the person that you're talking with is understanding what synthetic data means, that that person's meaning of synthetic data is the same as yours. Because there are different types of synthetic data. And Nick and I are just talking about one application of synthetic data, in this case, for product testing. Sometimes other people may be thinking of synthetic like a chatbot, and they're thinking that that's synthetic data. So the first thing is just making sure that the communication is clear in terms of like that two persons are talking on the same, with the same meaning of what synthetic data means to that person.
You feel that person, the audience in general, are just putting it all inside one big box, either it's a chatbot or whatever it is, and then they don't understand it, right?
It is. I mean, it's a new topic, so it's understandable that everyone has their own idea of what synthetic data is, and then you read in the news about different types of synthetic data, so sometimes it's not very clear what synthetic data means.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask, like, since it's a new topic, like, I've been hearing about it for, like, I don't know, two and a half years-ish, how is, like, the accuracy of it and the quality? Is it, how well does it improve from, like, I don't know, a year ago?
So we've done intensive piloting, I think now for 12 months now already, where we have over the time optimized the model. And just to explain what we have a little bit done, because to understand, you know, the accuracy before the, you know, when we were piloting the synthetic consumers, we were trying to understand at what minimum sample size, what kind of part we reduce basically sample size of a product test to get, you know, kind of good correlation between, you know, a traditional full sample size and product test versus a small sample size. And that was kind of a first stream of research, which we've done across 84 markets, I think over 132 categories, more than 40,000 consumer responses, where we analyzed at what minimum sample size we would get enough kind of a good correlation between, you know, the best and worst performing product of a smaller sample size versus a larger sample size. Yeah. And we noticed that if the best and worst performing product was, you know, 8%, for instance, top two box purchase intent, the correlation of a smaller sample size on, you know, 50, for instance, would be 0.8, which is quite a strong correlation, but it's not perfect. And also with a smaller sample size, you have the issue of, you know, lack of statistical power, and you can't do any subgroup difference. So then we added the synthetic consumers on that using, you know, a learning size of respondents sample, which could be 50, 75, 100. And then when we looked at the accuracy there, look, you know, adding to what extent synthetic consumers adds to the, let's say, accuracy measured by correlation across multiple attributes, not only across, you know, just the best, worst performing product, we were able to add the correlation of 0.9. So the synthetic offered a higher correlation versus the original sample for validation purposes. It's not perfect, but you always need to think about it's a trade-off versus the cost savings you have. So it's, you could think about, you know, using it in very early stage prototype screening or in markets where you may not have the budget to run a full product test to get a kind of a second perspective from a second market, for instance. Yeah. So it's not perfect. It will maybe be as perfect as real consumers. We want to be very clear on that, but the correlation is quite good in most cases. So correlation of on average 0.9, which is already kind of a strong quality.
That's impressive. Yeah, congrats. So when we started having this conversation, like a couple of days ago, we started having, and we talked about the article that you published on Research World called Just a Hype,
decoding synthetic data, just a hype, decoding synthetic data for product testing. And this is based on the study that you did at Ipsos, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What are some of the most surprising insights that you have from that study? Yeah, that was it.
Well, I mean, the study, you know, had two components. One was, you know, identifying the smaller sample size. I think that was already an interesting insight that you can, you know, if you're not looking at statistical power and just reducing the sample size to some respect, and, you know, you want to kind of get a broad, good read. That was the first interesting insight. But adding the synthetic consumers, I think the additional insight was, you know, that we would get that degree of the correlation was kind of good to see. But also what we've also noticed is that, as you know, the AI which we're using is understanding or analyzing the patterns of the data. You mean, so for instance, you have one consumer rating the product on a 9-point scale, for instance, an 8, another consumer is rating it on a 7, and all the demographics and all the attributes, so all the interrelationships of the different attributes with each other is already kind of some kind of analysis which shows us some pattern in the data, which was kind of insightful. Which we, for instance, ran a penalty analysis, which is a multivariate analysis in product tests. We understood that basically with the deep learning which we're using provided better insights than the original data in terms of the patterns, because it's looking at these patterns. That was also kind of interesting to see.
That's really interesting. When I was reading the article, I noticed that at some point you were mentioning data augmentation. And I was like, what's that? I was, again, like, I don't work with synthetic data. I don't work with AI apart from, like, summarize me this email.
Yeah.
So I'm always eager to learn what those topics are. Like, could you explain me what's data augmentation?
Nick, I can take this. So augmentation is just basically saying that the way we're using synthetic data. So I'll give you a concrete example. Let's just say that we have, you know, 100 people who did a product test and tested a product for us to tell us how good or how well they liked the product. And the client really wants to understand within this 100 people, there are 50 people maybe with blue eyes, and they want to learn a little bit more about these blue eye people, about how they respond to the products. But because 50 humans is not a lot of people to work with, you can generate some synthetic people from those 50 humans. So you could, for example, generate 100 synthetic people from that 50 blue eye human. And now you have more data that you can look at and play with. So instead of just 50 blue-eyed humans, now you have 50 blue-eyed humans and 100 synthetic blue-eyed synthetic people. So you have a total of 150. And so you're augmenting, you're boosting the human sample. You're strengthening the total sample or the data points that you have so that you can have you can do a little bit more. And that's really all augmentation means. It just means that we're trying to strengthen the data we have with some synthetic people so that our clients can dig a little bit deeper into the data. They can do more exploration. They can play with the data more. Or they can cut the data in different ways. It's really a way to allow our clients to do more with the data. But the important point that Nick made is that, you know, while we have done a lot of validation and everything to show that the synthetic people look quite similar to the human people, it's not perfect. So at the end of the day, we still tell our clients that this is to help you do more. But we're not saying that you should just use those synthetic people and base your decision only on synthetic people. In the end, having actual human data is still better. So, but that, to answer your question, augmentation, all it means is that we are strengthening what we have by adding more data so that you can do more of the data.
Exactly. At the end, it all goes back to one thing won't replace the other. It has to work together, like the humans and the data and synthetic data.
Right.
So we have this narrative with humanizing AI, which we always emphasize in our research.
Yeah. And that leads me to the question of the future. How do you see this field of synthetic data evolving in the following months, years, decades? How do you see it? Where do you think it'll go?
So I think it's a fair question. From my perspective, Colin and I may have different perspectives here, because there are all sorts of different, you know, future forecasts you could imagine. I could imagine that synthetic will be kind of a part, would just be basically something which is typically what you have in market research. I do think, you know, as for our side, we are looking to use also a little bit more historical data to optimize the modeling, for instance. I also think, you know, the combination of different AIs, such as, you know, large language models together with deep learning to replicate from synthetic consumers, individual spawn level open ends, is something which we could see. But it's going to be exciting. I mean, we're in one of the most exciting times, I think, in research with all the AI capabilities, but we just need to keep one thing in mind: no matter what the future brings, it's, you know, it's basically all statistics and math. And in order to use, you know, AI in a responsible way, you need to consider it's, you know, statistical models which we're using, which we need to consider, and also the, you know, basics of statistics which need to be also taken into account for.
That's great. I agree with you, Nick. I mean, I think synthetic data will become more and more, let's just say, quote, standard part of market research. So not just in product testing, but any market research where you're in a situation where you may not have enough data, or you may not have enough people to work with, and you may use synthetic data to generate more data, because data is used for a lot of things. Used by our clients to answer questions. It's used by data science people to build models. It's used to build AI models. So at some point, you know, synthetic data will be used. I think that the challenge is just making sure we understand what the limitations are and the drawbacks are, and that realizing that it fits. So it's I think today there may be two camps of people. People who say, I don't believe in synthetic data, and then people who say, I totally believe in synthetic data. I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's not either or. It depends on the situation. One thing Nick and I have tried to emphasize a lot to our clients in these early days of synthetic data is, what is the risk of using synthetic data? Given that we are in the early days, we're still exploring, we've done our validation, but we see that it's not perfect. So you have to assess the risk of the situation. If the risk of using synthetic data is low, and you're just using it to play with the data, explore the data, and generate hypotheses, that's perfectly fine. You know, we don't think that clients have much to lose if the risk is low by definition. Now, if it's a high risk situation where you need absolutely great data, accurate data, 100% human to make big business decision, then you probably don't want to consider synthetic data. But that's when it depends on the situations. You know, what we're recommending again is that let's use this for low risk situations. Let us use some common sense. So in the end of the day, it's not just about the AI. It's not just about the algorithms. It's about using some common sense to say, when do we apply this and when do we not?
I can imagine it's still pretty divisive when it comes with, again, like you either hate it or you love it. And I can imagine for the clients, it's kind of that, like you either really want to use it and you're eager to learn something and try something new, or it's just completely not on your books and you don't even want to hear about it. So,
yeah.
And speaking of clients, this question is more like for Dr. Nikolai, but Nick, you're going to be in Lima in our SMR event in LATAM, and you're going to present a case study with a client, right? But it's also touching on synthetic data. Can you tell me a bit more about it, this presentation?
Yeah, sure. So so the focus of the presentation which we have in Lima is basically how AI is transforming the research industry in LATAM. we're looking at large language models using generative AI, how that is impacting the traditional innovation funnels. We're also looking at non-large language models, which can be used for instance, synthetic consumers, generation of synthetic consumers. And we're going to show specifically a case study based in Brazil, where we used synthetic consumers to basically understand subgroup differences, which are hard to reach target groups, and how we can leverage synthetic consumers to boost those hard to reach target groups to provide, as Colin explained, a little bit more, you know, further analysis, deeper analysis, and with a little bit more confidence. That's going to be the focus. We're going to cover, you know, multiple examples from multiple Latin American countries. We have also examples from Peru as well in the presentation. So we're looking forward to a very engaged audience and also good discussions in terms of what AI brings to LATAM.
That's great. So yeah, definitely something that you don't want to miss. I'll be there, so I don't want to miss that one for sure. I will link everything on the show notes so you can find more about it. And the article, it's also on the show notes. You can read it on Research World. Just thank you very much for this. Thank you very much for the conversation. Thank you very much for being here and for giving me such an insightful think into what synthetic data is. I agree. It's still kind of, you either hate it or love it, but it's a nice way to demystify some myths for the audience and for clients and for everyone. So, yeah.
Thanks a lot for having us. It was a pleasure.
And that's it for our episode today. Thanks again to Nick and Colin for explaining me and everyone listening what synthetic data is and everyone that comes with this big buzzword. As I said in the interview, Dr. Nicolai will be in the LATAM event in Lima in April. And you can find all the information about this conference in the show notes. Everything is available there. So if you want to know more about synthetic data or anything else in Latin America, you should definitely join this conversation. For me, that's all. I'll see you on the next one. Thank you and goodbye.